Well, good afternoon. My name is John Clanginal, Regional Vice President of Council Portfolio Services. Today I'm here with Joe Muto from Wealth Management Specialist of Investment Planning Council. He works closely with his clients to provide financial planning services and products to help them live their dream. His motto is hardworking solutions for hard-earned money. Well, good afternoon, Joe.
Good afternoon, John.
So today we're going to do a conference call on the second quarter of this year and what the investment specialists are saying, buying and selling. And so let's begin with the first question. Joe, could you give us a quick economic overview of the second quarter?
Yeah, well, but first I got to read this short disclaimer. As always, commissions, trading commissions, manager fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the prospectus. Before investing, mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently. Past performance may not be repeated. This information in this call is derived in part by Council Portfolio Services. Oof, it's a mouthful. John, in our last call, I said the U.S. stocks have been outpacing the rest of the world during the last 3 years, and they continue to do so. I like to say that currently we're in a bipolar world. So right now we have two countries that have implemented the quantitative easing, or the QE, with their stimulus programs. They were the best performing ones. U.S., and as I mentioned in the last call, Japan. The emerging markets of China and Brazil, they were impacted by slowing growth around the world, so they were the most negative. The rest of the world, they're caught in between these two extremes.
Joe, that's great. That serves as a great backdrop. Could you just comment on the drop that we saw in June in the markets?
Well, the drop is due to this phenomena that now is called the taper tantrum. Now, tapering is the process of slowing, then reversing these exceptional levels of liquidity we see in the market that the U.S. Fed is currently injecting. Now, what happens is when the fear that this is going to stop or slow down, the market spiraled downward in June, because that's what we were hearing from Bernanke, that they're going to stop it. And then we've seen bonds go up, which caused bond prices to go down. But we have to remember, they didn't say they were going to stop the program. They said they're going to taper it, which is not the same thing.
Great. What about interest rates? Can you just comment on where we're seeing those go?
With inflation below the, and I'm going to kind of focus on the U.S. in this call, so we'll, when you hear me speaking, it'll be mostly towards the U.S. So with the Fed, their target of employment conditions remain structurally below their levels, their optimum levels that they like to see. So what they're going to decide to do is continue as is. The Fed, you have to understand, since they're the ones who hold some of the debt, it's in their best interest to keep the rates low. They're holding 10 to 30-year bonds, so increasing rates hurts them the most. They don't want to renew when they have to buy more bonds at higher rates. The Federal Reserve owns around 11% of U.S. debt. China, everyone thinks they own a lot, they own about 6.5%, still a lot, but 6.5%. The Social Security Trust, which is similar to the old age security here in Canada, they hold around 20%. So you can see why the Fed doesn't want to raise rates when they have over a third of the debt.
Great. How about inflation?
Inflation is interesting. According to the official stats, global inflation is low. Again, the U.S. government has been keeping inflation low. This way rates don't have to go up. However, the real inflation rate is much higher, and that doesn't really matter to these governments.
So, Joe, what is the real inflation? Because as a consumer, I've certainly seen my heating costs go up and gas prices go up. It doesn't seem to be real. So what is that real inflation?
Well, inflation, back in 1980, they changed the way they report it. And everyone could go on this website. It's called shadowstats.com. And on the site, they showed what inflation would be if they didn't change the way they report it. If you go there, you will notice that right now, if we use the old numbers prior to 1980, it's around just under 10%, rather than, you know, the 2-3% that they report right now. And you're right. If we look at heating, gas, hydro, all these things have gone up more than 1 or 2%.
Well, that's great. That's interesting, Joe. I'm going to have to check out that website myself. Okay, Joe, so now that we know that the Fed will continue to print money and they'll continue to buy up the U.S. debt, what risks do you see going forward?
Well, during our last few calls that we had, and I talked about risk in all different areas, those still are there. And basically, some of the downside risks that I still see is one, the Chinese slowdown. So the problem with that is if China slows down, it affects Canada, we're commodities-based. So there's a risk there. The European instability, pigs, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, Spain, still not resolved 100%, a little bit of instability there. Global debt around the world is getting higher, so there's a high global debt load that we have to look at. The ability to provide stimulus is not unlimited. This printing press machine that they have can't continue forever. And hopefully it doesn't break, hopefully they just slow it down. Europe may still need a bailout. We haven't heard anything in the last calls. I did mention it. But, you know, you never know. Does Spain need money? We don't know. And rising oil prices. Oil prices are good for Canada because we sell oil. But what happens as rates go up for oil, it makes goods expensive, which causes a slowdown there.
So we still have those risks in the market. But what can an investor do to help minimize the risk, or what can you do to help minimize that risk?
The one thing that I believe is that you have to continue to take a balanced approach. Diversification, you hear that, but also balance. And I stress one of the key factors to that is rebalancing. So what does that mean? Well, let's say you have a portfolio, 50% fixed income, 50% equities. You've seen the surge in the U.S. and Japan. If those are equities in the portfolio. We look at it, and let's assume right now that there's 60% equities, 40% fixed income. We want to rebalance to align it back to that 50-50 equation. How you do that? You take the profits out of the equities, you buy, put it in the fixed income, you're back to where you are, you actually sold high, you bought low, and that's the way you minimize the risk in your portfolio. And this is done automatically in our portfolios.
Well, that's a great service, Joe. Joe, could you also maybe we'll shift gears and just maybe always at this point go into what the some of your investment specialists are saying?
Well, what we'll do is we'll look at Mercantile Capital. They're a U.S. growth specialist, and since this has been a U.S.-based call, I'll stick to that. I'll just highlight them.
Okay. So, Joe, what are they saying about the U.S. recovery, and is it sustainable?
They feel that housing is finally recovering, so that's good news. And because this directly affects many industries, and it improves the wealth of its many consumers, right? You own a house, it's worth more, you feel better, you have more money to spend. It also puts the economy on firmer footing. Likewise, the state and local governments are now mostly solvent. The end of last year, they talked about the sequester. The cuts are now being finished. And in the months ahead, we'll see somewhat firmer growth.
Well, do the fundamentals of the economy justify the increase that we've seen in the U.S. Equity markets?
We look at three different top-down measures. But they're saying the three measures give them three different answers. But first, we look at the real GDP. They feel that the numbers were disappointing in the first half. It suggested the market was just rising on fumes. And as I mentioned, it was rising due to the stimulus. They felt job growth was a key missing ingredient, and it improved in the first half. So it gave a little bit of optimism and perspective of growth. And finally, the forecast for the earnings of companies were better than expected because they thought they were going to be worse, so they actually came back better.
Joe, could you give us an example sort of to highlight what Marsico has bought recently?
Well, one of the names in Canada we know this name is Canadian Pacific Railway. They see the earnings growth over the next few years because right now CP is transforming itself from a higher cost rail system to a lower cost, and this is under the new CEO, Hunter Harrison. So Marsico believes that it's going to give better operating performances and execution that will result in bigger gains in market share and will allow CP to outgrow its peer group.
Great. Could you give us an example or two on what Marsico has sold recently?
In the last quarter, one of the companies they sold was called Celgene Corp. They're a biotech company. They manufacture drug therapies for cancer. They felt there were better companies that they owned in this space, so they decided to sell Celgene and stick with the other names.
How about another one?
Another one would be Cummins Inc. They design, manufacture, and they distribute services for engines and related technologies. They're actually one of the largest producers of diesel technology, but they sold it due to weak earnings. Again, if they're not going to make money, they're a growth company. They want to see growth.
As usual, Joe, this is always quite a lot to take in. Is there anything else, news that you'd actually like to add?
In our last call, I mentioned that there was a new feature on my website. So if you go to www.allisonfinancial.com, under the resource tab, there's a section called Market Monitor. Here you'll find audio casts posted where you can listen to short interviews with some of the investment specialists and get their directly, under 5 minutes, their market themes and what they're buying and selling and what they see. But right now in July, we posted a few of them. The first one we posted was called Canada Still Attractive. This was with David Picton. He's the president and CIO and portfolio manager of Picton Mahoney Asset Management. He discusses the investment prospects for Canada as we see the slowdown. So he's going to talk about what they're doing. We did it in two parts, so there's a part one and part two. There's also, because of the U.S., Coralie Witter, portfolio manager and of Marsico Capital Management, she discusses how Marsico is shifting from this conservative strategy to take advantage of the new opportunities in the U.S. And we did this again in two parts. So there's part one, part two. And finally, we added Robert Pemberton. He's the managing director of TD Asset Management. And they explain how they're positioning the portfolios to protect investors if this rising interest rate environment continues. So those are the ones that we did. They're short, under 5 minutes, worth listening to.
Well, thank you, Joe. I'll be sure to listen to the audio cast. And once again, thank you for inviting me to join you today here, Joe.
Thanks, John. I'm going to put this on my website where people can access it. Also, they have the audio cast there as well. Feel free to forward it. Our next call is going to be scheduled for November 15th, where we'll do the third quarter, same time at 12 noon. If there's any questions in the meantime, please feel free to call me at 705-435-0001 or joe.muto@allisonfinancial.com is my email. And I'd like to say thank you, goodbye, our commitment, your future.